too.
It's Christy and Katrina here at DK 805 Podcast. We're here to discuss how parents recover with the ultimate devastating loss of their child to addiction. How do we walk forward in kindness and develop awareness? How do we stay in the moment every day? And how do we get through the days looking towards optimism and signs of mentality?
I'm Katrina, wanting just to acknowledge just being here and how we met. Christy, our boys, our Dylan, our Devin, and just the connections that we found so immediately, the signs that talking about the this journey in grief, it's really what I hold on to with the signs, and just knowing that I'm not alone, we're not alone, and that's I feel like what we're being brought together to do is to help other moms and parents and siblings and everyone know that we're just not alone, and this is an epidemic, and we are sort of just our boys were just these frontline soldiers, and the young men and the young women that are on this journey. So I'm grateful that we were able to meet the way we did and just get our stories out together.
Well, thank you. And I immediately, right when I saw your response to that post on Instagram, it did trigger me, because you and I both know as parents, we did everything we can, and there is no one solution. There is no one perfect fit that can save an individual. So in my reaching out to you was because I felt your words could have been my words, right, and I could read the anger and the pain within the words themselves.
Right.
And once I made the connection that we were in Ventura County, I was more instantly drawn.
Right.
What can we do to help our community together? What can we do to help other parents not feel so alone? And that moment, that night, it was one of those God winks. One of those winks.
It was. It exactly. It's, I mean, I looked back at it just in that mind's eye. I can go right back to just, I'm like, wait, I just go, Ventura County, out of all of the thousands of people that follow that that site we were on, and I know that for myself, I've, since my son transitioned, have just been, hours of countless, nights looking through different, it's almost like I was still trying to, find a way. I pray with other moms, but it's like, I have to catch myself, because the journey of saving him, finding the right place, or since we were on that recovery site.
Funny thing is, yeah. Katrina, I wasn't on that recovery site. I was scrolling.
Right, that's what
so
you said.
So I wasn't actually even on that site. Right, I just saw your response, and I'm like, oh, wait,
right. I understand
with that mom.
Yeah.
I understand that mom.
Yeah,
I didn't even know where that site was from.
They were like,
I don't even remember the name.
Yeah, I don't either remember your
response.
I think we kind of briefly went back when we first started talking about where it was, and you had kind of found it, but it was more about that. What they said was, we have the answer,
the cure. The way you're doing it is wrong.
And they
Mom.
Said something like, never give up on your child. And it just, my heart just like ached for every mother reading that. Like, if you have the cure, then give it to us.
Well, what I remember from that post, you saying, well, what do you tell a mom? I've done all that. Now what do you tell a mom?
Exactly.
And I remember reaching out saying, I would say, I'm so sorry. It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
It's not your fault either.
That's the most comforting thing to my heart when you said that, because I see myself in you for one, and brings up all the pain I know that you're in, and you are you're so much sooner along in this journey than I am.
I'm a year in, but I don't know if the pain lessens within a year. And sometimes, even though I'm a year in and you're 3 years in, pain is just pain.
Grief, like we were talking about, grief is just love with nowhere
no place to go.
Now it feels like it has a place to go where we can share our boys in their larger-than-life lives that they gave to us. And I'm so blessed that I got the time, my 28 years with my Dylan, and that similarity with your son, Devin, being 28. And when we just are those like D's and 28 and those things, and the D and the K, you, Christy, and I just want this to be something, and I feel them just saying, it's just not your fault, Mom. It's not your fault. And you did do everything. And
we did do everything, but I also feel that these boys brought us together because they know when we unite as a community, when we unite as mothers, when we unite as fathers, there is more power and change, and it needs to come from a place of kindness. It needs to come from a place
compassion,
of compassion, developing awareness. So that's where it's important to look at what we can do, not only as individuals, but as a community, because you and I both know there's still families out there trying to figure out how to save their children,
just
how to save
so
themselves.
Many, so many. And when the fentanyl just started just becoming, I had not even heard that word. I mean, it was an impossible thought that could be in his toxicology, was that it was, you know, trace amounts. For my son, his experience was it wasn't an addiction of his. It was, we were dealing with another addiction. And, you know, there is, I always go back to, so I do believe strongly in that this is, that, you know, the, wasn't that this is like a punishment or that he didn't do it right or anything. It's this timing of the fentanyl and God's timing for me, how I just have come to process that, he's still teaching me. This is what I'm here today to try to, you know, process, but hopefully help other, people in the process. But I feel like he had so much energy, larger than life, like I said, and he was though running from what was out there, and it is a poison, and it is just, that's what I want to just make awareness of, that it is just in, younger people that have just never taken anything can, and just overnight the parents are finding them, and this is still happening.
But well, and the way I look at it too, is that I look at it that our boys are on the front end of the epidemic. Yeah. They picked up their shields every day.
Yeah.
And the person who taught me how not to quit on life would be my son. He got up every day and did the best he could. And so being on the front ends, I feel like I need to be on the front end as well.
That's what I feel from Dylan. Yeah, going through
Bring all his messages.
Yeah, he's just, you know, he would just say to me, I said, like, what would I, you know, I just look back through some of my first writings to Dylan, and I just highly recommend that to anyone in grief. Just be just writing down, you know, your feelings and having the, you know, your, because Dylan does, he sends me like downloads. I'll call them McDownloads, but it's more like, you know, it's like when I feel like giving up, he just says, don't give up. You've got,
well,
you've
got
to
keep. Well, there is a place for anger and grief. There is a place for what isn't being done.
Yeah.
But if we stay in the anger, I don't think that's where change happens.
No, I agree.
Because anger is a powerful, powerful emotion.
I agree.
But it's toxic.
It is, yeah.
And so it's finding the strength to find the kindness.
Yeah.
And like I said, anger is motivating, but take that motivation and turn it to change and kindness and awareness.
I agree.
So we have something that we can bring to each other and to the community. Because if I came at you every day and just complained,
right.
I don't know if there would be progress.
Right, the rehabs that turned them away because they didn't get
their
this and that right.
Yeah, or the insurance company that told Devin he couldn't go to rehab and he died the next day.
Yeah, it's...
So there's
If we stay in that, or if we stay in that,
Dylan
got
paralyzed.
Asked to leave because he didn't get vaccinated, and, you know, these whys and the what ifs, that's not where we need to stay. And like, Dylan doesn't want me to live there, and I know that's,
no.
We've talked about that Devin, you have his beautiful music, and I have Dylan's messages, his last messages on my phone of just, I knew he was, you know, it was his internal pain and his struggle, but it was, he didn't expect that.
And we'll come across, we probably will come across the parents that are still angry because they're trying to save their children.
I understand.
And if
that.
We can look past their anger and see their fear, because the anger is just fear. We don't know what to do.
Right.
So there were plenty of times I was angry and I would be yelling at Devin. And it got to the point towards when the illness became progressive, I would just, instead of being angry, I'd say, I'm yelling at you, but I'm really just scared.
I know,
I'm scared, so I'd beg him.
Yeah, me too.
To go to recovery, because if I stayed in the anger, we stayed in the fight.
Exactly.
But there was no solution in that anger.
I was thinking of something the other day that just was something Dylan and I would do whenever it would be like driving to a rehab or a sober living, and we had gotten to that point where we knew treatment was the only way. It wasn't like we could let him kind of solve it himself. Like, we knew there needed that component of treatment, and that was like very early on. But we would be driving, and there would just be the things and I just still, it's, you know, the music's on. He loved, you know, older music, but he would just put his hand across the gear shift and just be like, let's not, because it would just be tension, that tension. And we're all trying to do the right same thing, but I would be all intense, and he'd be calm. He'd just take my hand, and it would just, that hand across the gear, he'd just say, Mom, let's just, and his hand wrapped around mine. He said, let's just be in the moment. Like, just be,
Some of the memories I have of Devin.
Yeah.
It would be so, they're funny now. Sometimes I look back at them.
Yeah.
They're funny because Devin would call me out on some of my behaviors.
Yeah.
Devin would say, Mom, you're acting like the crazy one.
Yeah.
And I would point the finger back and I'd say, no, Devin, you're the one that's making me crazy. But hindsight, I just didn't know how to handle.
Yep.
I didn't know how to handle it, and Devin didn't know how to handle it as well. So sometimes you have to take, I had to take a pause.
Yeah.
And I needed to listen. In spite of Devin being an addict,
yeah,
some of what he said was true. It was right. As parents, we need to take a pause, because the addicts aren't always wrong, and they're not just their illness. There's so much more. But
that's so hard to do, because I remember taking Dylan into, you know, just where it was everything on the line for me, because I could see the train coming, you know, just that everything on the line, just not even knowing again looking future of fentanyl. But early on in that addiction would be that, you know, he did think he knew everything a lot more than I did, and I could see he wasn't holding it together with his own struggles with, you know, just the, you know, the things that we know our children struggle with, their life falling apart around them, making the wrong choices in relationships, holding jobs, the things that were just as a mother, as parents, as families
expected, the developmental markers, addiction stole that from them.
Yeah.
The getting up, the, how many cars did Devin have? I can't even count how many cars he crashed.
How many DUIs and getting the calls and
the basicness, set your alarm, get up, brush your teeth, you know, all those. But they're not, the one thing I've learned through Devin's struggle, and it wasn't from Devin, it was from going through the parenting groups and listening to the other addicts in the room, is that honestly, I don't know if Devin needed me correcting him all the time, because as addicts, they already don't like themselves. And so towards the end of the illness, I would just beg anybody, just show him kindness, just be compassionate. And it's difficult sometimes to love those addicts because their behaviors,
to correct you there for just for an example of, but my Dylan was constantly he's teaching me as I'm even just hearing this, because I remember him saying to me, you know, it's like the substance abuse disorder, like it would be, he began taking away that the verbiage of like addiction or addicted. He's like, language that he began not wanting to have be used. And I was kind of, you know, told, you know, I, he won't even really kind of, he wouldn't want me to use that language. So I tried to find the right language that wouldn't be upsetting to him, because it was, you know, it was his internal, you know, just even in that, me also, after very shortly after when Dylan transitioned, went right into, I went to many open AA meetings to understand, and I had taken him to AA meetings too, and his drug of choice was alcohol and vodka specifically. And at such an age where it was just such an easy fix, he felt like, because it was everywhere, you know, and it's such a, and I just, and touching back into, you know, our boys both skateboarded, you know, and
that's
another huge component to them. He lived hard, lived large in like this, like in an energy with like, that just didn't seem that he was going to not be able to be his active jumping off a roof with a skateboard self without being, you know, without the drinking or without the weed, which is another.
Well, and one of the things that Devin taught me through his addiction as well is that when Devin was sober, mm-hmm. one of the ways he chased his dopamine was through graffiti.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so through the graffiti, I would like, now when I go and I see graffiti,
and I've seen it, it's so artistic.
It's so artistic.
You built a wall for your backyard. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I ended up giving Devin a whole graffiti board in my backyard because I wanted to keep him out of handcuffs. I'm like, it's like, but Mom, it keeps me sober. I'm like, but it does not keep you out of handcuffs. So now my view of looking at the graffiti, we really truly don't ever know what Mm-mm. goes on in street art.
Mm-mm. No, but what was written in one that you shared with me is that the pain and, you know, he was writing out his pain.
Yeah, he did. One of the graffiti arts he wrote was, you have to learn to smile through your pain.
Smile through your pain.
And how sad is that, that is a society that we believe we have to fake it till we make it, smile through your pain.
That's what they were doing, and that's what Dylan was doing.
They were, but as individuals outside of the pain, mm-hmm. I think there's a component. We can't excuse illegal behavior. That is the part of me that becomes enabling, but there is part of it. Now when I see somebody in active addiction, mm-hmm. I don't say, just pull yourself up out of your, you know, what you need bootstraps, pull up your bootstraps. Yeah. Some people don't even have the support.
Yeah, I would go back, and you know, if I could go back, but you can't, that journey backward time capsule, it just isn't possible. But what we know now is what I'm hoping we can just, you know, keep going forward with sharing, because it's the tools and
mm-hmm. the naivety of believing rehab's one and done. How wonderful would that be, and those that have been able to do one and done.
Yeah, I
am so excited, and I will, anytime I see somebody in recovery, I don't sit back and say, why wasn't that my son? When I see somebody in recovery, I just hug them and I celebrate their strength.
The strength it takes. Yeah, it does.
They're back for more, so welcome back. And I would always, when I would go visit Devin after his detoxing, mm-hmm. and I would look at him and I would give him a hug and I would always say, welcome back.
Yeah.
And he'd give me a big hug. And he's like, I'm home. So that's...
Yeah. I have an opposite way, with just a different perspective with my Dylan and my husband. I talk about this, and we have many nights of me not sleeping, going over the whys and the what ifs. But Dylan actually really never relapsed, because he really never quit. There was that. So we did do many rehabs, from the best to the different levels, styles, types, holistic. He was a very holistic, he would not take any prescriptions for calming his brain, for anxiety. But he would find that, that weed was his, he would say, just the natural way, Mom, I'm just going to do that. And we found early on, and when, like, that, you know, that was like a psychosis for him. He would just go into where he could just lose himself and talk about, you know, some...
Well, see, and that's where we come right back to how we did connect and how we met, was that post that said they had the answer.
Yeah.
If we had the answer, our boys would be here with us today.
Yeah.
We have an awareness. We have an understanding. I just, if there's a way to reach out to the community, let the community know they're not alone.
Yeah.
They're not alone. And I hope that they're not alone. And with August 21st...
Yeah.
Becoming Fentanyl Awareness Day, it's important to get that message out. It's important to the automatic response, because I still do it with everything I know. The automatic response is sometimes to judge, because it feels good, right? It makes us feel superior at times. Like, but that's not the cure. I don't know the answer, but what I know is we need to do better. Yeah. We need to do better. We need to bring more awareness.
Yeah.
We have a whole generation coming up, and they can't afford to make the mistakes.
Yeah, we're in such, I mean, that's this generation of this time frame where this, like, again, this poison is in this, where, you know, Dylan's passing was his toxicology. It was alcohol and, you know, Delta 9, which is high strains of weed, and trace amounts of fentanyl. So when I look at that, I look at, like, everybody's, you know, like I said, it didn't start from...
Well, weed, they say it's the gateway drug.
Yeah.
And weed does work on the same neurotransmitters in the brain as the opiates do.
Yeah.
It does work on that. And for Devin, it did start with weed.
Yeah.
When I got Devin's toxicology report, I too had to start Googling what was in Devin's toxicology report.
Right.
It was carfentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
That's stronger than fentanyl. And it was a xylazine. Mm-hmm. I can assure you my son did not know that. A xylazine is an animal tranquilizer.
Right.
Those streets are dangerous.
Yeah, it's
they're dangerous. And if we hear trace amounts of fentanyl, now Devin's at carfentanyl.
Right.
It's important to get the message out, because partying, we need to help the youth understand sobriety.
Right.
Is an option.
Right.
Sobriety.
Right.
We can have fun through sobriety and feelings, emotions.
Right.
It's difficult times.
Yeah, that feels like a whole nother conversation just because of the...
Absolutely, because it's the Fentanyl Awareness Day is coming up. So
right.
Let's...
Right.
What we can do together as parents.
Right.
I know community.
Now we have, you know, I carry Narcan in my car, you know, just everywhere I go. It's just a staple there. I gave out bags at one point very early on, and maybe 6 months into just, you know, starting to walk outside of feeling I could be in amongst other people. But I just was like riveting on, like, that was going to be the thing, the having the Narcan and giving it out to any vulnerable person I saw or a group of, you know, young people. And I found myself sort of just being like seeking. I'd go to where the skaters were and I just almost want, like, screaming from this, you know, mountaintop of like, and that, you know, I just needed to reel myself in, because at that point, realizing they are in their youth, they are in that sort of like, finding the right path, finding the right way to get this message out, where we're not like, you know, we're like all of a sudden we're just like, oh, do as we say and
no.
do as we do, because that's that whole, like you said, judging. We are just, it's coming from so much love and what we've learned.
Well, I know one of the things I do as a coping mechanism, when I see kids that I think are close to Devin's age, I go up to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, hey, listen, my son just recently passed away.
I do that also.
And I want to tell you, I just want to say hello to you.
Me too.
I just recently did that. And they were video recording. They were skateboarders.
Yeah.
So I was recording them. And 3 of the 7 of them told me their sobriety date.
Yeah.
And beautiful. Each one of them, I gave them a hug. And I said, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you. So sometimes I put myself in the position to tell my story.
Mm-hmm.
So they can share their story. And it's amazing how many people are in recovery and how we need to acknowledge recovery, not just the addiction, acknowledge
and
the
applaud
recovery.
It. Applaud the strength that takes. And it, again, I don't want that to sound, and for me, I just have to feel like I don't want it to feel like that it wasn't said to Dylan that we're proud of you. We're loving you where you're at. At some point, though, that's the thing that I must, for me, leaning into that, you know, this is something larger. It's like him going home before me is giving me this chance just to look back and be like, what can come from this?
Well,
know?
And I often think, too, for myself, as a parent, you look back hindsight and I'm like, what could I have done different? Did I do something wrong? Sometimes I think kids need to know that they're supported outside their family unit. They're not their illness. They're not their addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can applaud a complete stranger on the street and say, I'm so proud of you,
I know.
Hopefully that makes a difference. I want it to. I always wanted Devin to get that support. So if I want to give to Devin what I wanted Devin to receive from others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So...
Exactly. And that's why I do. That's why now it just feels so comfortable to, you know, you know, being careful in that too, though, just being, you know, because, and I think you also just confirmed that, but I had shared with you that I early on videotaped young skateboarders. It was just a thing. I just would, you know, I wanted to, it just, they were, the, you know, Dylan's with me all the time. I feel that all the time, but it's that seeing the skateboarder, the younger person. And I wanted to let go of each one of them. And then I kind of had to be aware of too, that this is, you know, that's a whole, not everyone's in the same space as Dylan and his, you know, their minds can be farther along, like especially going up to someone that's in the streets. Dylan was never in the streets. I have my heart to go into that, like, saving mode. And I just need to remember, I can do maybe hopefully another way to help parents who are currently going through, but also just...
Well, and I know I've shared with you before, and mm-hmm. I think I may have said it earlier on in this podcast mm-hmm. as well. The people that taught me the most about addiction mm-hmm. were the addicts. Mm-hmm. The addicts taught me how to love. So I think as a community, if we can sit and listen to what addicts need, are those in recovery, what they need, and remove what we think we know.
Exactly.
Because we don't know, and each individual's different. And towards the end of Devin's illness, I did active listening.
Yeah.
And I would just have to be silent to hear what he needed.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, his illness was pretty progressed, and yes, it is an illness.
Yes.
And it did ultimately claim him, but again, he was going to rehab, so he fought. He fought that illness up until the day he left,
yeah.
until the day he graduated.
Yeah.
And that was a result of, again, a system-wide failure. The insurance denied his admittance that night into rehab because the insurance company decided to drop the rehab. So if he was set up to go the next day, and he was going the next day.
You said,
but if he
that,
had if he had gone that
yeah.
night,
yeah,
he would, I hope, still be sober or still in the fight.
Yeah.
So it's a system-wide change that needs to be made as much as the awareness.
You know, so much of like timing and God's timing. I'm just to touch him because that, you know, it's your higher power for me that when you surviving this journey now with grief is it's like if I just believe that if it would have been this or that, like it is, you know, we're talking about the fentanyl awareness, but like, you know, there's just different ways to talk about that. I think I wanted for myself just to express that, you know, this was his timing, and it wasn't that this time of fentanyl did not give, you know, that one more time. Just that was something he would say when he was little, just one more time, Mom.
Yeah.
On the skateboard, just one more time, saying, you know, one more time. And it was that one more time is gone for. That's what I just want to, the message, like that message to be out there. You just,
absolutely.
It's the time to say, do the work.
Well, and
when I hear Dylan say that, do the work.
One of the best gifts our boys gave us was the opportunity to connect. And with that connection, this is why we are here today. My case is currently active, as you know, Katrina, in the Ventura County court system. So there are consequences for those that deal with in the drug realm. She's currently being charged in a murder case, and anger is appropriate, but so is compassion. Compassion for her family, compassion for all those that are affected. So anybody who is being affected by this epidemic of any sort of addictions, please, please reach out to us at DK805Podcast. We'd love to hear from you and get your input. So to everybody, to infinity and beyond, we're here as a community. Let's heal together.